So I'm going to paint it the chamber. That's all. And it takes up pencil. Written by many, many years ago. And when you hear this, you undoubtedly will either respond with a number of different ways. Either chuckling, or perhaps you will even smile. Maybe you'll even have some other reaction. Here's what he said. Quote,
yes,
there's
good.
Nothing difficult in the lifestyle of the Eved Hashem. It's the easiest, most enjoyable lifestyle known to the historical man.
That
then
that back.
Okay. Just want to see how many people.
Mothers who teach their daughters to dread the weeks before Pesach said the going.
It's funny, and how many here?
And yet we know, I know from my better half, because the women who are righteous, the going had that in mind as well. But he was concerned about the amount of
come back.
The women do, which is really amazing. And at the same time, they should also have a sense of Simchas Yom Tov. And that's not always easy, given the amount of preparation that they put into the Yom Tov of Pesach. I'll just say one other word of preamble. The Mishnah writes in Psochim, the beginning of Masechet Psochim, a famous Mishnah, where must you do Bdikas Chametz? So the Mishnah tells us a place where Chametz was placed. So I asked my Rebbe, Harav Soloveitchik Zatzal, the following question many decades ago. Given the fact that our wives and our mothers do such a thorough cleaning before Pesach, so obviously our houses are completely free of Chametz. So why the need for Bdika? It would seem to be completely unnecessary, superfluous. And he answered in true, brisk fashion, dialectical fashion. There are two separate concepts here. One is the halachic concept of bedika, the Chazal enacted, and the other is spring cleaning, which is very significant. But they're two totally different things. So, in introducing this topic, I take in mind both what the Goyim, Rav Chaim Pinchas Shoyim and Zatzal said, when my Rebbe, Agoyin Al Soloveitchik Zatzal said, what is required by Iker Adin? What is necessary from a halachic standpoint? From a strict constructionist halachic standpoint, what must one do on Pesach? What is required by Iker Adin? And what is not a bad thing, but Midas Chasidus? Something which is done with Nimishur Sadin and not required. Women, Baruch Hashem, they should be blessed, do way beyond that which is required. I'll begin with just some minor comments. I know some women who will take toothpicks and examine every piece of Lego in their house. I have students who are women, married women, that's what they do. Can you imagine how many hours they invest in this kind of effort? And when their husbands ask me, some of them are also my students, is that necessary? And I told them no. And then the women ask me, is there anything wrong with it? It's a fine thing to do. But if you have enormous amounts of time on your hand, why do I say that? Svarim on Pesach. So it has an issue that essentially, often they do so in the context of even eating, sometimes even eating from the five species, eating bread and the like. So there may be some crumbs that certainly may have. So he indicated that if you want to use a sefer on Pesach, that sefer certainly should be examined to make sure there are no crumbs in the sefer. But is one obligated to examine all of one's svarim? even those Svarim that I'm not going to use in the context of Pesach, certainly not. There is a famous comment of the Bali Atesis, the beginning of the Masechta, Masechta Pesachim, who speak about the fact that Bittul, which is what we do both at night, the night of Bedika, and then the morning again we do Bittul. This year it's going to take place, obviously, when we do Bedikas Chametz, which is the night of the 13th, and the second Bittul will take place on Shabbos. Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos. So Bittul takes care of the Torah problem of not having chametz in one's home, called Bal Yeroa, Bal Yimotzeh. So then why should one do Bedika? Why does one have to examine the house to see if there's chametz there or not? The answer is because there's a possibility you might find some chametz and eat it, Chas v'sholom on Pesach. With crumbs and Lego, it's unlikely you're going to eat the crumbs and the Lego. I don't think anyone here, as far as I know, will eat crumbs that are embedded in the Lego. So it seems from this comment of Tosfos that once you do Bittul, I do Bedikas Chametz because I might come to eat some Chametz that I find on Pesach, but since in many cases it's hardly unlikely, there will be no requirement to go ahead and examine the Lego. And that's the position of Hagoyin of Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. Chazanish was more makbid, more medakdek undoubtedly, but the Igros Moshe held it's not necessary. Shulchan Aruch actually has a case here where I have a square piece of chametz and I go ahead and put tar on the chametz. Tar, of course, is not something that's edible. So that is seems to be quite clear that I don't have to be concerned about that chametz that was tarred, because there's no probability it's not going to be eaten. And in a similar fashion, the Mishnah Berurah also quotes, the Chafetz Chaim writes here in Shulchan Aruch very clearly, in sync with the position of Hagoyin Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, if I have crumbs and I sweep it together, I may even have a kazayis of chametz, but if not for the fact that I would sweep it together, there's absolutely no obligation to go ahead and be concerned about those crumbs. The Gemara says in Pesachim, Pirurin lo chashivi. We're not worried about pirurin. We're not worried about crumbs. Beyond that, is there an obligation to go ahead and start moving all my heavy furniture, move my refrigerator, move my oven, maybe some piece of strawberry shortcake. I happen to like strawberry shortcake. Some piece of strawberry shortcake fell behind the oven, fell behind the refrigerator. It's unlikely that you're going to move the refrigerator on Pesach in order to eat that piece of strawberry shortcake. And there's the concept of Bittul that I just mentioned that takes care of the problem. People asked me this week regarding chametz that's placed into the, what someone here called the green dragon, the pach, the garbage, to use the more popular terminology. Do we have to be concerned about the fact that it's in my possession? It's in my rishus. Who owns it? We own those green dragons. Some people own them. Some of them are owned by the municipality. I don't know exactly what the legal elements over here. So there are people who are very machmir that will make sure whatever they're going to put away, the chametz that remains for Shabbos, that they're going to eat, and whatever pirurim are left, they'll make sure they throw it not into their garbage can, but somehow far away, that it should not be in their possession whatsoever. That's again, certainly umrah, because we're not concerned in general about pirurin, about crumbs. Now, it is true that sometimes you have young children who may put chametz in their pockets. Then those pockets have to be examined, no question about it. Young children with candies, sometimes candies have chametz, sometimes chametz ben, sometimes chametz that's not ben, but there one should be machmir, certainly, that those pockets should be examined. The question I was asked, do I have to examine the crevices and chairs? Perhaps some chametz may have fallen from the dining room table, the kitchen room table, in a crevice, in a crack in a chair, and maybe someone will come into contact with it. Again, one could be machmir but it's unlikely unless there are young children. If they're young children, they might actually come to eat from that chametz that they find in the floor area, in the chair area. So that's generally the rule of thumb. But one should not become stressed out over these kinds of things. That's exactly what I'm going to Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg was trying to present. So, a car. There's no question that one should examine a car for chametz. There's not a car that I know that people don't need chametz in, either the drivers or the passengers, assuming that you're permitted to do so, or your children, or your grandchildren. There's no question that often cars are very much places that chametz is placed. There certainly one should examine the cars very, very carefully. My grandmother, La Shalom, told me that in Europe, they used to filter their tap water on Pesach. What was that based on? Because in olden days, water was drawn from rivers and wells. People, Jews and non-Jews, often had chametz in those areas, and leftover food could find their way into these open bodies of water and into people's drinking water. So there was a reasonable concern that chametz particles might be found in water. Nowadays, there's no basis in that concern. Sometimes you hear that someone decided to go ahead and throw a hunk of bread in the Kinneret. It's not an issue of Pialocha. The municipal water supply in the modern cities here in Eretz Yisrael are thoroughly filtered and purified before it comes to the tap. Not everyone is happy with what comes through the tap, but that's a separate discussion. So what I'm trying to present at the outset is the need to balance priorities, to recognize that Pesach has to be treated with all the chumrah de pitzla, that's the language of Chazal, with all the stringencies of Pesach, but at the same time, the obligation to fulfill the mitzvahs of Yom Tov and Pesach joyously, to be the simcha. And again, in line with what we just mentioned, clearly, if there are cabinets or drawers or closets in the kitchen throughout the house that people place chametz in, unquestionably, that also should be examined. Generally speaking, what people do is that they either close those closets, lock them, but certainly if there's chametz there, any surface that came into contact with chametz certainly should be cleaned and probably covered during the Pesach cleaning process. And that includes the general living areas, I guess the living room, family rooms. Sometimes people bring food into bedrooms, into garages. So there's the kitchen area, the dining area. Some people are machmir. In our family, we try to be machmir that no one should take food upstairs. All the food is on the main floor. And that's the ideal, if it's possible to arrange that. But sometimes a child or even an adult might occasionally bring some sort of a snack into other areas. So then there's concern that a leftover chametz snack or some other appealing item of chametz might be found and eaten during Pesach. And therefore, one would have to examine those areas as well. So this is just by way of a general kind of introduction to this topic. But my overriding point is that one does not have to excessively engage in examining for chametz where really it's not necessary. One should try to figure out what's required, mikra din, what's not required. Someone asked me today about books and magazines that they read on an ongoing kind of basis. Do they have to be thoroughly inspected? Someone asked me about a computer keyboard. Must they inspect the computer keyboard for crumbs or other kinds of adhesive, sticky matters? I imagine that if a person does eat in the context of working at the keyboard, so there are vacuums that can be used to suction out whatever visible crumbs fall between the keys.
Papa, I have a battery. You might can bring the charger, 32%. Mama not hearing.
If food falls on the floor during Pesach, I was asked, must the food be discarded? And the answer is no. We assume that our floors are clean, and it's permissible to eat even during Pesach after a simple rinsing. And the same applies to utensils that fall on the floor. We're not concerned for the remote possibility that there was any chametz matter present that might have come into contact with the food that fell in the course of Pesach. And even if the presence of chametz would be suspected, the issue could be resolved halachically by simply rinsing off the food. I was asked about cleaning furniture, couches, removable pillows. I imagine the practice is to do so, to search out for any chametz, and often we can attest in our house that we found there cookies, pretzels, all types of items I may have collected there in the course of the year. But as I said earlier, heavy furniture, you are not obligated to go ahead and move it under any circumstances. It's unnecessary completely. Even in terms of clothing, in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, things were different than they are today. And if one is in the habit of putting chametz in one's clothing, in one's pockets, then there is an issue. No question about it. One would have to examine such clothing. So that's not generally the practice of most of us, I would assume.
Oh, wow.
Probably younger people may have such a
Zoom
practice,
but it's
especially after they've gathered at a simcha. Wow. Who knows how many pekalach? I don't know how much room they had for all those pekalach. But all of those pekalach can remain in some form or fashion.
Just
certainly, if one has a baby crib or items that are used for toddlers, for young children, no question that a crib may have chametz snacks or crumbs somewhere in the cushions, in the crevices. So that certainly should be vacuumed thoroughly and clean. And the same applies, someone asked me today about a pet cage. We assume that contain chametz. Often animal feed is actual chametz or has in it chametz mixtures that will also require examining that as well.
What do you do?
Someone asked me about a broom. I don't think a broom collects necessarily and retains a kazayas of chametz crumbs, as far as I know. I know how to use a broom, and I actually use it on an ongoing basis. So he asked me about the substance between the bristles. I don't think that is necessary before Pesach. Someone asked me, must they have a special Pesach broom? There are those who will have a special Pesach broom. But it seems to me that one could use the same non-Pesach broom to clean the floors during Pesach without any difficulty. Whatever crumb is shed by the non-Pesach broom is going to be batel. And similar to other undesirable matters that you would not consume in the course of Pesach, but there are those who are machmir to buy separate brooms to prevent even the remotest possibility of chametz being transferred from the broom to a table, to a countertop. And that is unquestionably, as I said, a chumrah. So one has to be cognizant again of what is required in Mikra Adin and what is a chumrah. Now, undoubtedly, when it comes to refrigerators and freezers, there for sure, that requires meticulous attention. Ain shum safek. They have to be careful to remove any crumbs, any grime that might be of chametz origin, any sticky matter from racks and shelves. And often you have in the racks, often in the rubber door seal, there are cracks. And that should be carefully washed and scraped out to remove any chametz that's lodged therein.
Rav, can you just click on unmute the... I'm sorry. You see where it says unmute? Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Yes, good.
I've become a technological wizard in the course of the year. The same applies to a freezer compartment. It should be clean in a manner similar to that of the refrigerator. And you don't have to be concerned about crumbs of chametz that are caught under the drain slats or the inaccessible area of the freezer, which is trapped there. Some people will cover those areas with tape, with plastic lining. I was told by a refrigerator man, make sure it has perforations for air circulation. So this is a general kind of overview of the areas that require Me'ikar Adin and those that don't necessarily need Me'ikar Adin. I'll mention another chumrah, which is practiced in our home by my Rebbe and Shlita, the backsplash, a counter backsplash. There's no need to paint or wash the walls before Pesach. It's unnecessary. Even if you have there splatter of food stains that are visible. But the backsplash behind a countertop or the wall area close to where baking and cooking is done, that should be washed down with some detergent, whether it's ammonia or bleach or any other detergent for that matter, because there's a possibility, and this is a modern Hebrew word, we're worried about Mashu Yashpritz Shama. Yashpritz became a Hebrew word. The spritzing that occurs, and that can occur. And who knows if that which is now attached to the wall in the context of cooking the Pesach will now boomerang back into your Pesach dig of food. So there is a basis for that chumrah. It's quoted by the Poskim, actually. And any wall area in the kitchen against which food or utensils are stored, a place should be cleaned and covered before Pesach. The possibility of that particles of this sticky splatter will find their way onto the Pesach kelim and into the food. Baby's high chairs, unquestionably, that should be clean. I was asked about outdoor areas, whether that also requires cleaning before Pesach. I assume that chametz left outdoors more or less will be consumed either by birds and the like, hopefully not animals, or will decompose over a period of time. But certainly, if you have picnic tables, or for that matter, sandboxes or swings, so you sometimes have to be concerned about the chametz that was left outdoors in these areas, and one should make sure that that area is searched and that area chametz is removed from in order that that should not be a problem, an issue that confronts you. So more or less, this is in terms of the issues that relate to cleaning for Pesach. I'm now going to turn to the kashering area, and afterwards we'll open the floor for questions. We'll also attempt to provide some inspiration, since that was part of the deal. And I'll just mention a number of items that are, again, fairly well known to all of you. I'm not telling you any chidushim, but still it's important to review them in the course of trying to cover the halachas of Pesach. many of us, if not most of us, I would imagine, have separate kelim for Pesach, Pesach different kelim, Chametz different kelim. So a lot of what I'm going to say in the next 2 or 3 minutes is probably not so relevant, but there are many who actually kasha kelim on an ongoing basis. And as you are all aware here in Eretz Yisrael, that we have what is known as Balei Hagola. I'm not talking about wagon drivers, but people who are involved in Hagola, in Hagolas Kalim and Kasher and Kalim, literally in the streets all over the country. One of the very beautiful elements and aspects of Eretz Yisrael. I'll just make a number of general comments about different types of material that can be kashered. Sometimes people have wooden kalim or stone kalim or metal kalim. This certainly can be kashered, but you have to be careful that these kalim should not have cracks or crevices. Especially wooden vessels often have cracks and crevices in them, and if they can't be cleaned properly, they cannot be kashered. People today have rubber kalim. Often it's made from synthetic material, not natural rubber. That should not be kashered. In general, kalim that are made of plastic, and plastic has become very popular and very common, not just in this country, but all over the world. Today, there are some plastic sirim, pots, that can withstand incredibly high temperatures, way beyond any metal kli. The metal kli would melt, but the plastic is durable and remains. But in general, plastic or melmac or nylon, other synthetic materials should not be kasher for Pesach use. It's in general a question whether you can kasher a plastic kli in the course of the year. This is a big machlokis among poskim here in Eretz Yisrael. Utensils made from China, what's called kli cheres, which were used in a hot medium, cannot be kashered. If they were used cold, that's another discussion. Porcelain is like China, can't be kashered. One of the big issues is the issue of Corningware, or Pyrex, or Corel, or Duralex, things that are made of specially treated glass should not be kashered for Pesach. What about glassware in general? So I think generally people have different sets of glassware that they use for chametz, that they use for Pesach. Many people, if not most, also have glassware that's used for chalavim, glassware that's used for psari. Glass is something which the Gemara says is smooth, that we don't know what happens in a glassware venue. Is there absorption? Is there not absorption? We don't know. So that's a general comment regarding some of the materials. I'm not going to go into details of Hagola because it's probably not so relevant. It's relevant to people who do the Hagola. They have to be cognizant of what they're doing. There are different methods of kashering. The basic formula, which is very important that all of us should know, is the formula that's quoted by a Gemara Pesachim and Aflamim and Beis, Rashi and Chumash, Kibolo Kach Polto. The way you kasher your utensil is similar to the matter which the utensil absorbed the Iser. And there are different methodologies. If fire was used, then you require what's called libun. If a liquid medium was used, then you require hagola. If it's a cold medium, then it's called hadacha, hey dalet chete. These are three different methodologies that are employed, that the halacha speaks of, and there are distinctions between them, but that, as I said, not the subject of our discussion this evening. That's a discussion which is very detailed in halacha. And so we're going to talk about some practical elements that are relevant to our lives. We'll start with a discussion that relates to general halachas of kashering that is important. The entire utensil, including the handles, have to be kosher. Because as heat enters the kli, chametz will penetrate the entire kli. And therefore, the handle has to be prepared for kashering. And the main issue with handles is that sometimes you have particles of chametz that get caught between the handle and the kli, and the vessel. So if you can remove the handle, sometimes it's connected by screws, you should do so and clean it. And those which cannot be cleaned or removed should not be kashered. Unless it's a metal. And then you could use the methodology called Liebman Kalb, which I'm not going to discuss right now. But kashering also has to relate not just to the pot and to the handles, but to the pot cover as well, because the pot, there's steam, and therefore chametz will be absorbed by the cover of the pot. And as I mentioned before, anytime you have cracks and crevices, that is very problematic in terms of kashering those utensils. So if I have a pot that was used to cook chametz in a liquid medium, let's say a pot that was used to cook noodles, it can be kashered with hagolah. And the pot cover as well can be kashered with hagolah. Hagolah means that it's immersed in boiling water. The entire pot has to be immersed in boiling water, the cover as well. The water has to be hot, you have to let it bubbling, and then it can be immersed. The distinction between tevila, when a person goes to the mikvah, or is tovel kli, and hagolah is the following. Hagolah can be done in segments. It doesn't have to be done all at one time. Sometimes you have a larger pot, and it's difficult to immerse the pot that you want to kasher. So you can first immerse one half, then immerse the other half. You can invert it. In the case of tevila, when you tovel kli, that's not possible. The entire kli has to be submerged in water at one time. So anything which is used over fire without liquid, even those that were used with minimal oil or shortening, let's say a baking pan, or the Gemara calls a shpud, a spit, a rotisserie, that requires libun goma, that requires fire. A frying pan, if it became treif, poskim assume that it should be kasher with libun. Spoons and forks should be kasher with hagolah. Knives, the Mishnah Berurah writes lechatchila, ab initio, one should purchase new knives for Pesach, not rely on kashering them. But assuming there are no cracks between the handle and the blade, you can theoretically kasher a knife for Pesach. I don't suggest it. Better to purchase separate knives for Pesach and not rely on the kashering process. People ask me about Kiddush cups, wine bottles, whether they're made of metal, made of glass. Assuming it's only used for wine, only used for Kiddush, so you would have to clean it and rinse it. But if it was used, let's say, for yash, yayin saraf, for whiskey, or washed together with hot chametz, then it has to be kashered with hagolah. Someone asked me about the tray which they use for the candles on Shabbos and Yom Tov. You would have to clean it thoroughly, because often it's placed on the dining room table. That's what people light, neighbors of Shabbos and Yom Tov. And so you should make sure that it's thoroughly clean. I mentioned a few moments ago that china and earthenware cannot be kashered for Pesach. And we also mentioned regarding plastic, kalim, and the like, also should not be kashered. Someone asked me about dish towels and tablecloths that are used for chametz. If you wash them thoroughly with hot water, with a detergent, that's what I'm going to Moshe Feinstein Tzatzal Hill. I heard from my Rebbe, Adisun Albert Tzatzal. But it's preferable to have separate dish towels and tablecloths for Pesach. Tables and countertops. There are different positions regarding what to do with tables and countertops. Let's say I have a table or countertop with a formica surface. That should not be kashered for Pesach. What you would do is you would wash it, you would cover it, Some people will do Iwui, Iwui Kli Rishon. They'll take hot water from a Kli that's on the fire and pour it on the table, and then subsequently cover it. They'll cover it with different types of material, heavy plastic or heavy cardboard, and wooden tables and counters, even those that usually are used with a cover, often dining room tables, buffets, should also be cleaned and covered. And the same applies to a high chair for young children or feeding table. It must be washed carefully and covered. Many people will take material and use it to cover areas in the pantry, in cabinets, in drawers, and closets that are used for food. Obviously, you're using different types of shelving paper for that purpose. And whatever silver and dishes are there, obviously, are going to be either removed if they're chametz stick, and you're going to replace it with pesedik items. And I spoke earlier about the refrigerator and the freezer. I want to get to the kitchen sink. The kitchen sink is very significant. There are different types of sinks made of different material. The ideal, of course, is to get a sink that is stainless steel. That's like Gan Eden from a koshering standpoint. Because the only thing that has to be done is Iwui Kli Rishon, and that will suffice. Taking hot water from a Kli that's on the fire, you have to let it reach a certain temperature, pouring it over the airy area of the stainless steel sink, and you have now a kosher sink. There are those who will be machmir, and they will put an insert, a rubber kind of insert, in the sink. There are those who have separate sinks. A sink that's used for chalabi, one used for psari. So that will be utilized as well for Pesach after they do this iwui in a stainless steel situation. And then they'll also cover it. They'll have an insert that fits into the contour of their milchigas sink and fleshigas sink, and that's what they'll use. Of course, it has an area where the water can drain when you wash whatever you're going to wash there, silverware, etc., sakumim. Now, if I have, however, a kitchen sink made of porcelain or made of enamel, that cannot be kashrut for Pesach use. That's a clear statement in the poskim. So what do people do? Again, they will do iwui. They'll pour the hot water on those sinks, the porcelain sink, the enamel sink, and then they will cover it either with an insert or with aluminum foil or some other material with contact paper, something along those lines. Metal sinks can be kashrut for Pesach, as I mentioned a moment ago. The ideal is stainless sinks, stainless steel sinks. But what should one do if one has a metal sink? So in general, before you kashrut something, you have to wait 24 hours. That's a din of Shulchan Aruch. And a sink should not be used for hot chametz for 24 hours. It should be dried thoroughly. Then hot water, boiling hot water, should be poured from a Kli Rishon onto all portions of the sink. Sometimes there are those people who use what the Gemara calls Eben Luban, a hot stone, because hot pieces of food may have fallen inside the sink. Mr. Brewer talks about it. But you should not use the sink for hot chametz for 24 hours. And then there should be Iwui Kli Rishon, hot water poured on it. And if it's a porcelain or enamel sink, it should be covered with some sort of an insert that's available. You can find it actually here. There are all kinds of inserts. You have a measurement of your sink, and you can get that insert without difficulty. Someone asked me about a bathroom sink. I don't think people, I would like to hope and pray, they don't bring food into the bathroom. Dishwashers. This is one of the areas that is discussed by many poskim. So again, the ideal is to have a stainless steel dishwasher, and then you more or less have solved the problem. You can run it through a cycle. Of course, you make sure it's clean very carefully. And assuming that the temperature inside the dishwasher is yatzoledet, it reaches that temperature, then it can be kasher by running it through a cycle. The only difficulty with dishwashers in general are the the reshet area. That's an area you have to clean very, very carefully, where the food, grime, grease, residue will gather, will collect. So that has to be thoroughly clean. What about if I don't have a stainless steel dishwasher? I have a porcelain dishwasher or an enamel one or plastic one. So really, it cannot be kosher to Pesach. And even metal ones are also difficult to kosher for Pesach, because again, you don't know for certain that all parts of the dishwasher were cleaned thoroughly as required before koshering. There are commercial dishwashers that sometimes people have. And again, it has to be cleaned, especially in all the folds and crevices, the areas around the screws and the like. That's the most difficult to do. And where it cannot be cleaned well, ideally, one should use a blowtorch. But I don't suggest anyone use a blowtorch. It's a dangerous kind of expedition, which is fraught with many, many, God forbid, serious possible potential consequences. The racks in a metal dishwasher cannot really be cleaned thoroughly, should probably be replaced. When a person buys a dishwasher, you should try to buy a stainless steel dishwasher, and you should buy separate racks if you possibly can. Again, this is all in a utopian ideal world, which we don't live in. So you have to be cognizant of these factors. Someone asked me about an electric coffee maker that was used with chametz. Seems to me that that should not be kosher for Pesach. If it was not used with chametz, so then you can kosher it by boiling water inside. Many electric coffee makers don't reach out to lettuce. That's what I've tested a number of times. I have a yeshiva. I'm a Rosh Yeshiva for many years, and they have all these appliances. You can imagine young man with an entire kitchen. And I've tested to see whether these electric coffee makers, I don't think they reach out to lettuce. The fan is lighting. Someone asked me about braces. I discussed this the other night with Dr. Eliyahu German Shlita. Orthodontic braces, do they require koshering? I told him no, totally unnecessary. I don't think that the heat in one's mouth is yatzo lettuce. I hope not. Otherwise, it would be catastrophic. I don't think even the hot food or drink, hot coffee, hot tea, would create a shaila blia that it would absorb. And that's why people who have dental fillings, I don't think they raise that issue as well. As far as I know, they eat milchiks, they eat fleshiks. Obviously not together, chas v'shalom. Ideally, in the discussion with Dr. German, if the braces can be removed, they should be clean. He told me there's a position that they have boiling water from a clean rishon poured over them. Someone told me a few years ago he did that, and that was the end of his braces. So that's not advisable. It cost him several thousand shekel. I don't think it's necessary. I think one should clean one's teeth carefully, no question about it. Maybe one should not bite into hot chametz for 24 hours before Pesach. Also discussed this with Dr. German, all kinds of dental implants and fillings. But brush your teeth thoroughly before. And this way you will not be getting to any issue. Floss it well. Going on to kitchen sinks and counters that I spoke about just now, just add perhaps one element. The issue that is required, because often hot chametz foods and liquids are poured directly into the sink. What's cool, what I mentioned before, Iwa Kli Rishon, the course of the year. See, if you're going to put hot pots or containers of food directly onto the sink surface during Pesach, you have to kosher. And koshering a sink requires a lot of time and effort. And I've suggested to people over the years, they purchase a sink insert. It's a kind of molded hot plastic or hot rubber kind of liner that fits into the sink. instead of doing a full-fledged kashering process on the sink. Countertops that I alluded to earlier, there's a need for kashering. If a person takes hot chamistika pots and put them on the surface during the year, and there's a bliya, there's an absorption from the non-kosher pot to the counter. And even though there's not really bliya, because bliya can only occur through a liquid medium, the Gemara says that. But it's possible maybe it was greasy, maybe there was a spillage, something overflowed. So irui klirishin, as I said, is the way hot water, hot boiling water, to kasher the kitchen sink. Some people will not only kasher the sink, but also will cover it with either, as I said, using an insert or some other covering. I want to get to the issue of the ovens and burners and the like. The top of a gas range or an electric range should be kashered, and the recommended method is to first clean the burners, clean the grates. There's a pan below, clean that, and it should be, in effect, turning on the fire full force. And normally, after probably, I imagine, in a gas stove, I'm just guessing now, maybe 15, 20 minutes is sufficient, probably for an electric stove, much less. Once it turns red and the piece of tissue paper will be burnt on it, the stove is kosher. This method kashers the grates, kashers the burners. But the problem is the area between the grates is covered with enamel. And most poskim consider enamel and halacha to be like china. And that's not something that you're able to go ahead and kasher. So you have to clean it thoroughly. And after you kasher the grates and the burners, the area between the burners, many people will cover it, either with some sort of a pesach tikablech that has an opening for the fire, or they'll use aluminum foil and the like. And the same halakha applies to the area below the burners and the grates. It should be cleaned thoroughly and covered with aluminum foil and the like. I was asked about a hot plate. Can you kasher a plata, a hot plate? It's always better probably to purchase, they're not that expensive, a plata of a Pesach. But Me'ikra Adin, it can be kashered. There's a question whether a hot plate, Bichlal, comes to Yad Soledet. So we at Yeshiva actually did an experiment a number of years ago. We had three different types of hot plates and tried to cook an egg on a hot plate. In one case, it took about an hour, literally, to cook an egg. In another case, it was a bit better, but none of them were very efficient, to say the least. So you can kasher it. It's probably not ideal to do so. Now, in terms of the oven, that is the area which has to be cleaned thoroughly. Dirt and rust have to be removed. We're talking about rust that has substance to it, that has mamashes to it. If the rust is only what the Mishabura calls flecken, some sort of discoloration, doesn't have to be removed. So one should use a chemical oven cleaner initially, and after the cleaner has been rinsed off, the oven should be inspected. If there's any tangible rust or any kind of dirt, you should inspect the inside of the oven, the racks, the door, the hinges, the floor of the oven. Someone I know even uses a flashlight for that purpose. Then it's ready for kashering. So this is the subject of a massive machlokes among the poskim, how to kasher an oven. Hagoyin HaMashe Feinstein Zatzal held that an oven that's used with esh requires libun gomur. And the only way one can come to libun gomur is by using a blowtorch on the interior surface or using red hot coals that are stoked inside. I don't think these methods are practicable for the average householder. But that was the position of Hagoyin HaMashe Feinstein. My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, and Rabban Kotel Zatzal both disagreed with Rav Moshe, and they contended that you don't have to use libun chavar, yin kashi with libun kal. And the same principle that we apply to other kelim applies here as well. Kibolo kapolto. The way it absorbed, that's the way you're going to expel the whatever was absorbed in the tanur, the oven. So if you use the oven at temperatures of 400, 500 degrees, the same temperature will be used once it's cleaned. Once you use the chemical detergent, as I mentioned earlier, then you're going to heat it up to that temperature. And then using that principle, kibolo kapolto, you can now kasher the oven. Self-cleaning ovens, according to most Pesukim, can be kasher by simply running it through a self-cleaning cycle. It's another one of those ideal, utopian, idyllic worlds. Stainless steel sinks, self-cleaning ovens, not everyone has that. But again, there's a plus with that kind of an oven because it's easy to kasher. So I think the practice of many people in Klal Yisrael, those who don't follow Hagadah of Moshe Feinstein regarding the oven, this is what they do. They simply put it on the highest temperature after cleaning it carefully and using the detergent and the like, and then they kasher the oven with the principle that I mentioned of kibolo kapolto. The grates and burners of the stove actually don't really technically require kashering because they are constantly exposed to fire. And any food substances that spill on them are quickly burnt. And usually they're dry. Usually you don't have a liquid medium. Because in order that tam should be absorbed from the grates to the pot of food, you would need a liquid medium. But before Pesach, we are machmir, chumud de pischa. So people clean the grates, they turn on the jets for 10 to 15 minutes, approximately. And that's how they go ahead and they become sort of red hot for that period of time and they are kashi. What about a range hood? So a range hood technically doesn't require kashering. It's true that sometimes you have what the Gemara calls zeya, hot vapors from the regular cooking rises inside the hood and contact the surface. But it doesn't usually make the inside of the hood either treif or chametz stick from a kashering standpoint. The vapor really can only cause bliya, can only cause absorption if the surface with which it comes into contact is extremely hot, yatzel lettuce. That's not usually the case. But the problem is, as someone explained to me, that often food residue from the vapors will accumulate and turn into grimy substances on the inside surface of the range hood. So even though the presence of chametz or treifer residue is not in itself a problem, if the constant moisture of cooking causes some of the chametz residue to become moist and dissolve, and now you have droplets that fall to the kosher pot. If that were to occur, the pot could become chametz thick, assuming there's no bittul b'shishin, which of course doesn't happen on Pesach. Pesach is also b'mashu, even the minutest amount is only problematica regarding Pesach. Often I'm asked about microwave ovens. In general, as you probably know, I'm opposed to using a microwave oven for both flakes and milchiks. I think they are very small, very self-contained kind of areas. I don't see how it's possible that there's no mamushes that remains there, even assuming there's no bliya that takes place because of the nature of the electromagnetic radiation that's responsible for heating the item. Just the food becomes hot and not the walls of the microwave. But at the same time, there's always some mamushes. So once you decide whether one is going to use a microwave, I'm talking about in the course of the year, only for halaviyah, for psari, but not for both. Me'ikar adin, if one cleans the item carefully between each use, I'm in a yeshiva, but trust me, that does not happen. They have no concept of cleaning anything. It's not their fault. They're young men. And youth is wasted on the young. But certainly, the chatzilah, it's not ideal. So what about kashering a microwave for Pesach? it can't be kosher. What generally people do is they'll fill a utensil after they clean it thoroughly. They don't use it for 24 hours again. They'll fill a clean with boiling water in the oven, and you boil it there, or it's heated by conventional heat, until this thick steam fills the microwave, and then it can be used for a Pesach. Okay, that's more or less an overview. I just want to, perhaps if I may, provide a few moments of inspiration. This week's parsha, a fascinating pasuk. The Torah speaks about the contributions that were made to the Mishkan. So the Torah indicates that there was a tremendous philanthropic spirit that was generated by Klal Yisrael, Marbim Ha'am L'Havi. They came literally from everywhere. And it was just an overabundance. But was it only the male folk? And the answer is no. The pasuk says, Vayavohu ha'anashim al ha'anashim. A very strange terminology the Torah uses. Vayavohu ha'anashim al ha'anashim. What does that mean? So Rashi says, al means in. Women came together with men. But this expression is not one that's commonly used. Al ha'anashim. The Ramban says the following. Ba'avur ki ha'nadavah b'tachshitin mitzviyah yitzel ha'anashim yoter. Women tend to utilize jewelry, all types of cosmetic, aesthetically pleasing pendants and bracelets. And that's what it says, al ha'anashim. Shem hayu sham barishona v'anashim nitpululahem. They're the ones who initiated the contributions to the Mishkan, and the men simply followed upon their heels. Rashi also uses a language of smuchim aleihem. So there's another Rashi in this week's parsha, probably well known to all of you, when the Torah speaks about the marot atzavot, asher tzavu petzach ol moed. These were the mirrors of the choshet that women used to beautify themselves, and then they went ahead and they wanted to bring this as a donation to the Mishkan. And Chazal tell us, Rashi quotes, that Moshe Rabbeinu was taken aback because perhaps this represents something that's used for their own personal beauty, and perhaps there's an element of Yetzer Hara. And Hashem Yisbarach said, Kabel, told Moshe Rabbeinu, Eile chavivin alai min hakol. This is more dearer to me than anything else. Because as a result of the women and their process of beautification, they were able to strengthen the metal, M-E-T-T-L-E, of their husbands who were under Avodat Perach in Mitzrayim. And as a result, Klal Yisrael were able to multiply in Mitzrayim Vayifru Vayirbu, despite the adversity and despite the surroundings that were obviously of another nature. So it's really incredible how Chazal always see in women correctly their ability to completely transform a home, transform communities. Chazal say, Beso Zuvishto. A person's house is his wife. She creates the tone in the home. She, to a large extent, is responsible for the ruchnius in the home, the spiritual environment, the ambience that exists there is largely a product of her persona, her vamkeit, her warmth, her infusion into the home of all the basic fundamental values that we exemplify. Hakol Toli B'isha. And it's so true what I mentioned at the outset, B'shus Noshim Sikonios Nigalo Yisrael Mimitzvayim. So your role in many respects is way beyond the role of your male counterpart. It's an incredibly significant role, and the ability that wonderful Jewish women throughout the millennia completely changed the landscape is responsible unquestionably for Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker, for our ability to maintain ourselves as a nation despite all the incredible odds against that. And the Torah speaks about Kol Isha Chochmas Lev B'Yodea Tobu. Not only do they have that element of Lev, but it comes with tremendous Chochmah Bina Yisrael Nitna L'Isha. So Alavai Hashem should grant you, all of you, individually, as women, continued Bracha V'Atzlacha L'Chol Ma'aseh Yedeichem, to continue to beautify the homes that you are able to infuse with the incredible ruchnius, the ability to be mashpi on children, and Be'ez Hashem, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, l'dori doros, l'netzach l'tzachim, and that's chus. Just like Noshim Tzikonios were responsible for the gula then, so you, Noshim Tzikonios, will be responsible, halavai b'karov, for the gula that hopefully will happen, v'mer b'yameinu, amen v'yameinu. If there are questions, feel free to ask, and I will attempt to answer them as best I can. If there are individual questions, feel free to call. My number is available, and you can call me anytime you wish. Yeah. If you don't mind, perhaps just removing the mask, I'm sorry. Yeah. Granite, yes. I'm speaking about granite. There are all different types of granite. The problem is that it's very hard to know what exactly. Different people have different types of this porous granite. There's granite with semi-permeable membrane. There's granite with, which is even more porous than that. And then there's the, what claimed to be solid granite, which has absolutely no elements of, nothing is permeable. So that's the ideal. But even the other granite, which is semi-porous, and the issue is that maybe there's some absorption that occurred as a result of that kind of surface. But most likely, I can't imagine that people, what do they put on the granite? Pots. No one puts a luxury kugel on top of the counter, as far as I know. I see you're questioning that. But I would assume, under normal circumstances. So that's why, and even if they do put a luxury kugel, I don't think it's Yatzel Levit. I don't think it has that level of heat that will be absorption. But Lieter Chumra, Lieter Say, the practice is to pour hot water on it, assuming that someone told me that granite can actually be disfigured. Depends on the nature of the granite. If it's of a very solid nature, I don't think it will be impacted by hot water. But someone told me hot water can actually, achlal etzan, can cause damage to the granite. So if that's the case, then one should wash it down well, cover it very, very well, and I don't think a problem exists beyond that. I mentioned that earlier. In my house, it's done. There are poskim who mentioned it as well. I don't think it's required b'ikra adin. I mentioned at the outset what's really required b'ikra adin and what's a chumrah. According to my mind, it's unlikely that whatever spritzing occurred onto the wall behind the oven is now going to spritz back at you in your pace of the gapan. Yeah.
Last year, because of Corona, we bought maybe a frying pan, and we didn't table it because when they but what do we do this year with those pots?
If you could be table it, that would be the ideal. There were so many different eitzes that were given at that time. I can give you about four or five of them, but it's not necessary. Hopefully, we're out of this, at least more or less. I would be table it. I just can't hear.
I'm asking a general question of the community. Is the fish mikvah that's behind near Bill the Gulf, is that open? Because if it's beginning of Corona, it is open. I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
I'd be told with it at this point in time before I'd use it. In general, the halacha is that often you may be surprised to hear this, but you don't investigate these things, and I do. Before the corona, which is, we haven't gone to many svachot in the last 10 months, unfortunately, but often I go to svachot, and I tend to find my way into the kitchen. I'm very into investigating to see. I'm interested in primarily one issue, visual aqua. There's a lot of that going on in this country. It's probably the major problem in restaurants and hotels and what have you. Non-Jews who are involved in the cooking process, the distinction between Sfardim and Ashkenazim, they're more machmir Sfardim and Ashkenazim. But I also discovered the following, that often in many affairs that I go to, the kelim are not table. So the hetter that's used is the fact, well, it's not my kli, it's sha'ul. A kli that's borrowed does not require tefillah. Mikra din. And the food does not become treif if the kli is not table. So even though we were using kelim that were not table, or kelim that were given to a non-Jew through all kinds of different ma'alchim, lechatchila, one should be table, that's the proper thing to do.
I remember speaking to the Rav last year, when kashering the stainless steel sink, there's a, it has, it's like being rotted by it, but when you kasher it, you have to get, it has to be straight from the kettle over every single centimeter, or is it, if it's poured down, that's okay as well?
If you're a brisker, here's what you'll do. A brisker means you're very machmir. You will use the kettle, the hot water kettle, assuming it's yatzoledet, hopefully reach the right temperature, whatever that temperature is, that's another machloket. But whatever the temperature is, you will pour it on a surface that you will identify. You will wait till it dries. Then you'll pour it on the next surface. You'll wait till it dries. Then you'll pour it on the third surface. You'll wait till it dries. Why is that so? Because the problem is in the course of pouring it, so the water will cool down below Yatzalet. Now, how long it takes for it to cool down, ask a scientist. Perhaps they'll tell you. I don't think it takes more than, certainly, I can't imagine it remains that temperature for more than a minute. That's the problem. So if it takes you a while, it'll cool down. It's no longer Yatzalet. And the water cooling down may be a problem now in terms of, so the Chatchila, if it's possible to use that kettle, the sinks are not that large, so it's possible that one literally goes around the entire sink in one fell swoop. That is the way to kasher it without getting involved with brisk and all the hummus. But
that's okay.
Yeah.
And do we need to? We don't need to cover the same thing as the backsplash underneath the cabinet, do we?
No, I don't think it's necessary. Some people will, as I mentioned, put an insert into the sink as well. Years ago, with ovens, I think we used to do that, we had an insert in our oven. We have a self-cleaning oven now. So, Baruch Hashem, we came to Gan Eden. But prior to that, we did not have a self-cleaning oven. And so, Rabbi Shem Feinstein is very machmir. As I mentioned, it requires Liban Gomer for an oven. So we used to purchase an insert, and all the cooking was done inside that insert. After we kasher the oven the regular way, bringing it up to the highest temperature, cleaning it with a, we used to use Easy Off. Anybody ever heard of that? Very strong chemical detergent. And then after that, we put an insert inside the oven. But now it's not necessary, Baruch Hashem. Self-cleaning oven, more or less, is the way to go if you can somehow avail yourself of that.
Shabbos urn, which is only used for water.
Lefi Ani Yisdaiti, not necessary. There are people sometimes who use the Shabbos urn, they'll put the challah on top of the urn to give it a crispy kind of flavor. Assuming that it's only placed on top of the urn, and assuming there's no seepage that takes place, which I imagine is the case, and assuming that the challah is not Yatzoledet, which is not, I don't see an issue. You'll clean the top of it and everything is fine. There are those who are machmir. They feel the need to purchase a separate urn. Someone today was talking to me about that they put the matzah on top of the urn to make the matzah crispy for Leil HaSeder. And they sometimes use matzah during the year, which is also placed on top of the urn. I don't think it's an issue. Al pi halacha. But sometimes people use the urn for, they put the noodles directly under the spigot. That's already a problem. because they're talking about chametz coming into direct contact with the spigot, which is often plastic. It's not necessarily made of metal, and it's not easy to kasher. As I said, anything of a plastic nature, the chatzila should not be kasher to Pesach.
Toaster ovens,
smaller ovens,
can they be kosher?
The problem with the toaster oven, theoretically, it can be kosher. Assume you can clean it. It's almost impossible to clean a toaster oven properly. Very difficult. It can be done. I know people who told me they spend 8 hours, I'm not exaggerating, cleaning the toaster oven. They have a beautiful toaster oven. I would suggest not to do so. For that matter, someone asked me about a toaster. How in heaven's name do you plan on kashing a toaster for Pesach, which is maled gadush peruvim lechem? There's crumbs all over the place. And he said to me, a young man, well, I simply inverted it, turned it upside down, and everything is fine. Everything is fine, I told him, except for the toaster oven, which is not Pesach. But this was a toaster, not a toaster oven. But toaster ovens are of a similar nature. They're very hard. There are a lot of things that are caught. You really have to probably take it apart in order to make sure that the crumbs are not there.
I just want to confirm. So if you're using a sink insert, you still have to do the
leave
of the pot.
A sink?
Yeah.
Iru kli risho.
Right.
You simply take hot water and from a kettle, some sort of boiling hot water, and pour it over the entire sink.
The insert doesn't dissolve in that.
That's right. You're probably technically right. Technically, if you have an insert that completely envelops the entire area, it should suffice. But the meaning is to do iruvi before you put the insert.
Regarding the kitchen cabinet, do they keep cleaning them or do they have to be covered?
According to my humble opinion, the answer is no. It's not necessary. But there are those who are machmir. They cover everything. There's such a thing called Chumra de Pischa, mentioned by the Poskim, that we're more machmir when it comes to Pesach than we are Kol HaShana Kula.
Is there
I think, again, in the case what you spoke about earlier, before the area where the dishes are sitting, I don't think it's necessary to cover all the shelves and the like. As long as they're clean well, there's no chametz. You're not putting in hot pots with food inside the closets. They're putting in pots that are clean. There's no necessity to be grabbed in at all, whatsoever.
So just to clarify, the wine decanter can be just cleaned. It's open for wine, not whiskey. Can be just cleaned.
That's right. The answer is yes. Unless it's used, the becher or the Kiddush cup for other purposes, other reasons. I don't think people don't use it as a drinking cup. Sometimes you have liquids, perhaps they may have some chametz in there. If they don't use it except for Kiddush, I don't see a problem.
And just to clarify, if we're covering the granite,
there's
no need to kasher
it
as well.
Meikar Adin, there's no need. That's correct. If you're covering it well means with the heavy duty material, then it's fine. But many had the practice of doing on that as well. Iwi, they'll pour hot water onto the...
How does the rock hold of some people kasher granite, real solid granite?
Many people do. Many people kasher granite. Many people pour hot water on it. They clean it with some chemical detergent again. They scrub it carefully. They pour hot water on it, and then they use it for Pesach.
And how does the rock hold?
The practice is to do it, to use it. Not everyone. Many people will cover it, but some people don't want their granite covered. They find it to be unsightly, cosmetically not comely, not very pleasing.
It's not comely to cover it.
If you want to cover it, you can. Are you mechuyev to? I don't think so. In my house, we're very into Chumrat the Pischa.
Us too.
Okay. Yishikach, if you have patience. Yes, of course.
We have a self-serving oven. We need to cover the door where we get it off.
There's an issue with the door. There's no question. The Poskim all mention it. Sometimes the door has a rubber gasket, different types of material that are on the door. And the issue is, how do you kasher that, or can you kasher it? Is it possible? I think it has to be cleaned very, very well. That is the key. And often, sometimes there can be adhesions of chametz or whatever was cooked in the oven can somehow attach itself to that. If you clean it well and use a chemical, I think it's fine. Right, that's right. Okay. Hopefully next Tuesday, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll talk about food items and also some specific dinim of Erev Pesach that fall on Shabbos.
Thank you. Thank you.